from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get close up with an art installation at Community Hospital North.
I get to find out what's going on at Garfield Park this summer.
And I'll get a preview of the Early Music Festival, which starts this weekend. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Community Hospital North has just acquired its newest large-scale work of art. The outdoor installation, Close Up by Jody Hardy, is a 15 by 30 foot sculpture made of 16 hand-painted wood panels suspended from a steel frame. Depending upon the direction from which it's viewed, Close Up shows a colorfully rendered human hair or nerve vessel magnified thousands of times. Hardy just graduated from Heron School of Art and Design with a master's degree in sculpture. This project was part of her coursework and facilitated through the Frank and Katrina Basile Center for Art, Design, and Public Life. The center's director, Kathy Patalik, and Jody Hardy visited our studios to speak with Travis DiNicola.
Jody, Kathy, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both in the studio today.
Thank you, Travis.
Great to be here.
And Jody, I believe some congratulations are in order, not just for you, but you like what, your whole family, like everyone graduated at the same time or something. Tell me a bit about that before we jump into the rest of this.
Believe it or not, we didn't plan it that way, but somehow the planets and the university all came into alignment. My husband walked for his PhD in philanthropic studies. I walked for my master's in, well, Master of Fine Arts in visual art and public life. And my son graduated from the School of Informatics with a degree in sound engineering and music technology.
And this was all at IUPUI, all done on the same day.
Exactly. It was very frantic trying to get from one hall to the other. But thankfully, it worked out really well. My son's graduation ceremony was in the morning, and Mark and I graduated, walked in the afternoon ceremony, so it worked out perfectly. We could all be at all of them.
Well, that's fantastic, and congratulations to all of you. Very cool. We're going to actually be talking about today is the work that you did as a student at Heron in the master's program, and a really interesting piece. And my understanding is that part of the reason that you actually chose Heron to do your master's work in is because of the public art component that Heron offers. Is that correct?
Exactly. I was an undergrad in art history and fine art studio at Heron 2003 through 2006.
Mm-hmm.
One summer, I had a summer job down at the mall, and I lived on the canal, so I was able to walk downtown. And it was the first Arts Council of Indianapolis public art exhibit with Tom Otterness's pieces throughout the city. And I was so delighted and stunned, quite frankly, to see how the general public, just passersby here for the firemen's convention or whatever convention, would be standing on a street corner and look at one of those whimsical, bulbous bronze mm-hmm. sculpture and go, hee, 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 hee. And before the light switched to walk, they were actually talking about the ideas that perhaps the artist had behind the work. And I just knew in that moment that as an artist, I really wanted my work to be at least available to as broad a audience as possible. So the new public art MFA was being talked about at the time, but I graduated, I went on to some professional positions and gallery exhibits, but still had that Tom Otterness, you know, mm-hmm. twinkle in my eye, so to speak. And then when the program was launched, I was encouraged to apply and had a conversation with Eric Norgelin, who became my advisor, and it was an amazing experience. It really, really catapulted mm-hmm. me from making art to having these real-world experiences and the commission that I won for Community Hospital North to execute commission.
I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. But before we get to that, Kathy, would you just briefly tell us, remind us what the Frank and Katrina Basile Center for Art, Design, and Public Life, is that the full official title?
That is the
title?
Full title.
Okay, because you've been on Art of the Matter talking about this great program before, but for listeners maybe who have missed it.
Yes. The Basile Center for Art, Design, and Public Life is the arm of Heron that allows our students, graduate students as well as undergraduate students, to get that professional practice, that real-world experience out in the community, so it enhances their education while they're at Heron and hopefully gives them an opportunity to do something where they're working with real-world timelines and budgets and meeting clients and understanding what it's going to take when they graduate and they go out there in the world. So the Basile Center serves as that liaison. We secure these projects and then manage them throughout the process.
Very cool. So Community North came to Heron and said, we want something for our hospital. Is that sort of how this all started?
That is correct. 3 years ago, they in their North hospital, they have three niches outside their facility, and they wanted to fill them with public art. So they did come to Heron, and the project started actually before I began working at Heron, and the first one was installed, and then we've installed two since then, and Jody's was our third that we just installed, and we have another round. So it's been a rotating program with the Community Hospital North, where a sculpture will come out, be deinstalled, and then we'll install a new one.
Okay.
So we have another one coming up. Students are fabricating it this summer, and hopefully we'll be installing November, December. And hopefully we'll continue with this collaboration with the hospital.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a great opportunity.
Absolutely.
Now, Jody, I'm curious about something, because, I mean, you originally trained as a painter, correct?
No. I was what Heron calls general fine arts is really an interdisciplinary art program.
Okay.
So you can cherry pick various interests, and I am a sculptor. That's how my brain kind of is wired. I see things in three dimensions. But there's so many aspects and mediums that fall under the purview of what's considered sculpture in contemporary society. So
and certainly, I mean, you need to have an understanding of sculpture for most public art, as it is, very physical and taking place in the public sphere. I guess I was thinking you were trained as a painter because paint is such a big part of this new installation that you've created. But so describe the piece for me. It's titled Close Up. And I've yet to see it in person. I've seen video of it. Very cool stuff. But describe it for us.
Well, the niche itself at the hospital is 40 feet wide, 6 feet deep, and 15 feet tall.
And this is outside, but it's covered.
It's semi-enclosed.
Okay.
It looks almost like a theater proscenium, or three separate identical theater prosceniums. Mine's in the center. And I built a steel structure that is relatively invisible. It's made to just blend with the architecture. Hanging from this structure are 16 individual wooden forms that are angled with a point facing outward. So kind of envision an accordion curtain. Mm-hmm. Only these are separate 15-foot long pieces of wood. Rather, I'm sorry, they're 12-foot long pieces of wood that hang independently. They swing independently, so there is a kinetic aspect to the piece. Now imagine from one view, you're looking to the west and you see this one image that's been split into 16 sections. You look from the other direction, it's a different image that's been split into 16 sections.
And if you look at it front on, it's sort of a totally different thing altogether, right?
Correct. Yeah. And so it metamorphosizes from one, it shifts. I don't know if you've seen those billboards that every couple of minutes it rotates. They're little triangles and it rotates.
Sure.
So keep that in mind as well. Well, I was inspired by electron microscopy images of a human hair, which is one of the images.
Mm-hmm.
The other image is of nerve passageways.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring a theoretical ideas to it, stripping away our appearance. When we all look really close to the human forms, we're all essentially the same, and that's what medicine does, and that's the wonder of medicine.
With these images, these close-up microscopic views of both hair and nerves, they become very abstracted when they're close up, and then you've made them so large that is really sort of fascinating image. I want to know though, why hair and nerves? I mean, you could have gone with skin, you could have gone with saliva, you could have gone with, I mean, there's so many, different things I would imagine you could have chosen. Why hair and nerves, though?
You know, it's interesting, when I was looking at hundreds of images, to select from, a really beautiful, really gorgeous image was of E. coli in the human intestine. And it was beautiful, but I thought, this is not appropriate. And that's one of the things I think is really interesting about the dynamic
the
of public art.
Of E. coli. Yeah.
Well, things that may or may not be appropriate in mm-hmm. a public setting yeah. when those people are walking by. Quite frankly, sometimes artists make decisions based on instinct, mm-hmm. based on aesthetic choices. These two images really work together well, but they were very different.
Mm-hmm.
So from there was able to be a transition. And I really, even though you can't tell it's human hair, you mm-hmm. would never know that.
Right.
You do recognize those nerve passageways. Are they blood vessels? No, they're kind of blue. I don't know. You know, so there's a kind of a mystery there mm-hmm. for people to give them something to actually think about. So it was an aesthetic decision. And then I do bring a personal aspect to the nerve passageways. Both my mother and my 42-year-old sister-in-law died of brain aneurysms. And I spent time in the hospital at their sides with a hospital-assisted passing, which was very important times mm-hmm. for me. So I do bring that personal. Yeah. It's not something that I speak about a lot,
mm-hmm.
but I do believe that what is most personal is most universal. So we've all had losses in our lives, and I was able to share that.
Well, I thought they were both interesting choices, and I figured there must be some reason behind them. Let me ask you this, too. For people who see the piece, as they're approaching it, they won't necessarily know that they're images of hair or nerves. Is there any sort of, signage or explanation for people to make that connection? Or
we're hoping that there will be some labeling
mm-hmm.
Provided in the front of the building that is a plaque that explains some of that in very
yeah.
brief form.
Sure.
In very brief form.
Sure, of course. Now, you just completed the installation, and so people can go up and see it. It's an odd thing to think about. I might go to the hospital to check out the art. But if someone wants to go to the hospital and check out the art, how would you suggest they get there, and where should they look for it?
Well, it's in the main entry, the Circle Drive,
mm-hmm.
Where they have the parking services and where you would...
You don't have to be admitted or anything.
You don't have to be admitted. You can do a drive-by viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well as a drive-by. That was part of my intention.
And yeah. they do have free parking there also, so you can go into the garage, park for free if you want to look at the artwork up close, because all three niches right now are filled with artwork from our students. And they're all three very different and very... very exciting pieces. So if you want to do a drive-by, like Jody said, mm-hmm. that's fabulous. Or you can take a few minutes, go into the garage, and then come on out and take a look.
What's the this is a question for either or both of you. What's the response been from the employees up at Community North, as well as maybe some of the patients that have been going in and out as you're installing these works, working with them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. My contact there has been Ryan Chelly, who's been phenomenal to work with the Community Health Network Foundation. And he has shared with me numerous times the kinds of comments they get from their patients. Many of their rooms face the direction where they get to look out their window and they can see the artwork. The staff, several of their offices are mm-hmm. facing that way as well. It really, the whole purpose of them wanting to include art into the entire facility is really based on some research that says art can be healing. It can help no matter what you're coming into the hospital for. Sometimes there could be a joyous occasion like a birth,
mm-hmm.
but many times there's an illness. And so having the artwork visible on the exterior, which is what our work provides,
yeah.
as well as in the lobbies and throughout the halls and the rooms, really helps with that healing process for so many of their patients. And he has shared with me just numerous comments that their patients have had. The staff love this work. Anyone coming in and out visiting someone has made some kind of comment about, oh, that was really great. Well, we just passed out there. Where'd that come from? Or that's really nice that you guys mm-hmm. include art here. So we're hearing that kind of feedback through him based on what he's hearing from his patients and staff.
Jody, how about you? What did you hear from people as you were working on the installation? The installation took a little bit of time, I understand.
The installation itself physically was a day-long process
mm-hmm.
where the cranes put put the steel structure into place with some help of very able and strong people. And then we hung the 16 forms. Then I came back 2 days later and did touch-up painting. That's always necessary. That always needs to be done. I was very fortunate. People would stop in their cars and roll down their window and say, "Oh, I have to tell you how beautiful that is." What? One woman ran up to me and said, "Oh, please, tell me what your inspiration was." And when you install public art, mm-hmm. you don't often get to hear that kind of feedback. You know, if it's a gallery show and there's an artist opening and people can talk to you about it. So I really felt fortunate to have that little bit of time out there that day and
excellent.
And have immediate positive feedback. Yeah. I was thrilled.
So what's next for you?
I've moved to St. Joseph, Michigan, which has a very thriving arts community, and it's just a stone's throw from mm-hmm. Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finishing a public art project that's an independent project. This isn't commissioned by anyone. This is something that I have self-funded, and it is a work that puts public art in the hands of the public itself. I've created these circus-like wagons that I will deliver one to New York City and one to Los Angeles, and I have a third that I'm still trying to decide. It's kind of a secret right now where
okay.
it wants to go. And I'm in the process of finishing up those projects and setting it up, the delivery on the other end. So I'll let you know.
Travis DiNicola with artist Jody Hardy and Heron's Kathy Patelic. Kathy is the director of the Frank and Katrina Basile Center for Art, Design, and Public Life. Hardy's installation, Close Up, can be seen at Community Hospital North. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Garfield Park wants you to come experience movies, art, nature, music, and much, much more. Tom Weidenbach, Arts Senior Manager for Indy Parks, came by to tell Sharon Gamble all about the arts at Garfield Park this summer.
There's just something about parks and summer, and I realize that Indy Parks have things going on year-round, but in the summer things really ramp up because people tend to spend a lot of time outdoors. What are you most excited about coming up this summer?
Well, of course, I'm biased toward the arts, and of course, yes,
we
Indy
love
Park.
That.
I think yes, as do I. So I won't go into all the other wonderful things like our wonderful pools, aquatics, golf, environment, all these wonderful things that parks do, and we'll get right to what I consider the best of what we do, which of course is the arts. And the Indy Parks arts can be thought about in three succinct ways. You can look at the concert side of things, the movies, and then everything going on at the Garfield Park Arts Center.
Hmm. Well, let's start with concerts.
All right. Well, this is an exciting year for concerts. We're going to be hosting 70 concerts
this year.
70, which is wonderful and is the tradition for Indy Parks. Most of those concerts, 63 of the 70, are offered free to the public.
How do you get the funding to do that?
Well, thanks to all of your listeners, tax support, that would be the largest. And, of course, we also welcome sponsorships and partnerships with small and big businesses around the city. It's a rather creative model we have to make sure that we can bring this number of concerts to the public.
Public-private partnership.
You got it.
And since tax dollars are part of that, we should all take advantage.
Absolutely. You're paying for it. Might as well come
might
out and
well
enjoy
use it.
It.
Yeah. And the spectrum of music, bluegrass, pop, rock.
Absolutely.
As we're having this conversation, I'm thinking about running into some folks this morning at a local coffee establishment who were geeked about a Beatles cover band that was going to be in town tonight. Don't get excited. It's passed by the time
that's
you hear
right.
this conversation.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was June 4th.
Yeah.
And that's one of what we call Celebrate the Greats. It's a series where we're looking back at some of the most influential music in rock and roll, primarily history, and crooning history. I'm not sure if that's actually a genre, but we're going to have... there you go. We're having, coming up, we're going to have two more in that Celebrate the Greats series. We're going to be having Peter Oprisco, who is a Frank Sinatra celebration band leader. He and eight members of his band are going to come out and really sing it up. And Elvis Celebration Band coming up on, July 23rd. Both of those are at 7 p.m. The Elvis Band, as you mentioned, is Elvis 2000 out of the Chicago area. And you might have seen an Elvis impersonator before, but this is something very different. This is eight guys all dressed up as Elvis.
No.
Elvis to the Eighth Power, they call it. And so,
that's a whole lot of love.
That's a whole lot of love. They're dressed up to the nine, and they all have their horns out, and it's just this mega show with an Elvis theme.
What a trip.
Both shows are going to be a real treat. Again, that's Frank Sinatra on July 9 and Elvis on July 23rd, both starting at 7 p.m. And those are being hosted at the McAllister Amphitheater, and that's at Garfield Park, which is on the near south side.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful facility if you haven't been out.
And get there early and walk through, like, the Sunken Gardens or any part of Garfield Park is spectacular.
There's so much to see there. You mentioned, yes, the Sunken Garden, the Conservatory, our Aquatic Center. Come and take a dip beforehand. Sure, why not? And, it's a very historic park as well. Some of the structures are, from the 1800s. In fact, the amphitheater where those concerts are held was built in 1922.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I know, because I recently went to a program in the conservatory, that there are these great historic photos of some of them are postcard views, because this park was nationally famous, is still nationally famous.
That's right. Indianapolis's first park, in fact.
And for, now that we're talking about trivia, for trivia buffs, the original site of a place you and I both once worked, the Children's Museum.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So we'll talk more about that in another conversation.
Sounds good.
So movies as well.
That's right. We are hosting Movies in the Parks again this summer. We're going to be hosting 8 free movies at various parks around the system. I don't know if you know, but there are actually 206 indie parks.
No way.
I would love to say we could have a concert movie at each, but with 206, we can't quite get to all of them.
Now, wow.
But
so that includes even like the little, what do they call them, pocket parks.
Pocket parks, neighborhood parks, That's right. There's 6 regional parks. Those are the biggest parks, and then we have 2 other classifications.
What are the 6 regional ones?
Oh, boy, you're putting me to the test here.
Sorry.
All right, let's see if I can do this. Eagle Creek, Garfield, Somme, Holiday, Northwest Way, and Southeast Way.
Okay.
I would almost bet on that.
Yeah, okay, that's great. So, and they tend to draw from a pretty, not just people a block away, but a bigger neighborhood.
That's right. They often have multiple facilities and a mix of both lawn, turf for playing football or softball, mm-hmm. but also, some wooded areas as well. So they give different amenities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how do you decide where to do the movies?
Well, we have a lot of talks about this. We want to make sure that since we can't reach every park, we want to reach every region.
Mm-hmm.
So we look around, and sometimes we go places where we know we'll get a great attendance. Sometimes we go to places that perhaps don't benefit from programs as much as other areas do. Like one place we know we always get a great crowd is out at Holiday Park.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks love Holiday Park. But some of the parks don't get quite the attention that Holiday Park does, so we try to drive audiences to some of these wonderful spaces that may not be as well attended.
And what are the practical aspects of how do you show a movie?
Well, it's not as simple as it seems. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we have multiple screens and projectors, and you have to think about your crowd size. You have to pull out your PA system and make sure it's all catered to that space. Some spaces are much more conducive to showing a film. But we have some creative solutions, including an inflatable screen.
I love that one. I'm so glad you still have that. That's my favorite thing.
Yeah, it's a big hit.
And then the films are all family-friendly.
Of course. Family-friendly and free. That's just become the corner. It's always been the cornerstone of parks.
So the movies are pretty evenly distributed around the city then.
That's right. You can find movies this year at Ellenberger Park, Somme, Rodeus, Northwest Way, Municipal Gardens, Holiday, Southeast Way, and Thatcher. So all around the system.
Yeah.
And for those exact dates and movie titles, you can visit us online at indieparks.org.
Couldn't be easier. Now, in addition to concert series, movie series, I know you have workshops and afternoon seminars and adventures and all sorts of programming aimed at all the way from little kids up through old kids.
I think I'm one of those old kids.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I hope I always am. Yes, you can take part in great programming and arts programming all around at our family centers. We have 16 family centers around the system. Again, you can find where those are at indieparks.org. But the hub of those great arts workshops and classes will always be the Garfield Park Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I mentioned that's one of our big regional parks. It's where the McAllister Center is, where that Celebrate the Great series is. Well, the Garfield Park Arts Center is located right near the McAllister Center, and it's a great place to take a class or a workshop, to attend a special event all around an arts topic or even an international theme. And there are programs going on every single weekend all throughout the summer at the Garfield Park Arts Center, a great place to visit.
And there are classrooms and studios? I mean,
studios,
what is it like physically?
Absolutely. As you walk in, you'll find a lot of multi-purpose spaces, classrooms, studios, as you mentioned. You'll also find quite a bit of space in a more museum-like setting where we host exhibits of a wide variety of topics, from photography to abstract art to even an exhibit that highlights and celebrates the artistic abilities of our city employees. So we have a really,
really
wide variety of arts. And you can come in and, of course, free of charge and visit those exhibits at any of our open hours throughout the week. If you come on the weekends, it's a special treat because we have a program called Arts for All. And families can come in unannounced, without registering, and they can take part in a hands-on arts activity with one of our great art specialist facilitators, and they'll probably get to take something really cool home at the end of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Give us a peek behind the scenes. Obviously, there's got to be a pretty significant staff behind coordinating all these efforts, or either that or a small staff with a lot of multitasking, a lot of skill sets.
Yeah, I would say more the latter.
What?
Yeah, we're pretty lean and mean there.
Yeah.
The arts staff total is 11. For any parks, and those 11 folks
do. How many parks are there?
206, and that involves everything that we do at the Arts Center, that being the exhibits, the special events, and the workshops and classes, all the concerts we've mentioned, and many more, and those movies, all with 11 staff, and I would say half of those are part time or seasonal. So,
oh my gosh,
we're hardworking staff.
So, what lured you into this job? I have to ask.
Well, the Indy Parks director, Stuart Lowry, was kind enough to invite me. He and I worked together, you mentioned earlier, at the Children's Museum.
Mm-hmm.
We met working there together some years ago and had a wonderful experience there. He transitioned to parks, and he gave me a call. I was living in South Carolina at the time, and the chance to come back to Indianapolis, well, I didn't even have to think about that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I dragged my family back and never looked back.
Tell me something about coming up with the programming that the general public might not know. Are there, do you spend a lot of time looking at park systems in other cities? Do you get ideas from there? I'm assuming there's one or more professional service organizations where you get ideas.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you that Stuart Lowry and myself and a few others of us that made that transition from the Children's Museum have definitely brought that flavor over to Indy Parks. I think, most people hear Indy Parks, they think family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly that's the way we want it, but our program hasn't always catered as much to family as we'd like it to be. So this year, we started to do a lot of things that invited families to come out in new and exciting ways. One that I'd like to tell you about is another great series that we're doing this year out at Eagle Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And that series is a family fun concert series. And this particular series targets families with children preschool through maybe 12 or 13 years of age,
mm-hmm,
and come out and hear some really great music. I know that a lot of us have been stuck in a car listening to quote-unquote children's music, and some of it can just grate at your nerves. But every once in a while, you find that artist that can really get everyone in the car singing and
yeah,
everyone excited. And these are the artists that we're having come out at the Point on Eagle Creek. We're going to be having artists including Brady Reimer, Trout Fishing in America, Steve Charney, and the Billy Jonas Band starting on June 26th. And like I said, you can find the complete schedule at indieparks.org.
And your children are how old?
Thank you for asking. I have an 8-year-old daughter, Lily, and a 4-year-old son, Cole.
So you kind of have a focus group.
You know, I'm pretty lucky.
I'm seeing some tax deductions there just because.
I do research year-round.
I do indeed.
And I know which CDs I'll throw in the, the minivan when I'm up to the store and which ones are to be avoided. These, I can guarantee, the ones as part of our Family Fun series are the best.
Sharon Gamble with Tom Weidenbach, Arts Senior Manager for Indy Parks. Find out more about offerings at Garfield and all of Indy Parks at indieparks.org. Again, indieparks.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I think this weekend might be a gift-giving occasion.
A gift-giving? Really?
Yes.
What do you have in mind?
Well, it's the first full week of summer.
It
Happy
is.
Summer.
That's so true.
Woo-hoo.
Happy summer to you as
Yay.
Well. Yeah, what are you doing to celebrate?
Well,
oh, you've got your garden is on tour this weekend as part of
indeed.
Historic Meridian Park Home and Garden Tour.
You have a good memory. Thanks for remembering that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Noon to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. Come on down or up, depending on where you are. And we have other things to do to celebrate summer on our calendar that we call
What'll
We
Do? Well, I know two of my favorite things sort of collide this weekend at
Uh-oh.
Brouhaha. That'd be theater and beer. So, the Phoenix Theater's annual fundraiser, Brouhaha, 15th year, great beer, delicious food, live music, and it is all supporting the great shows at the Phoenix Theater. Takes place Saturday, this Saturday, the 26th, from 3 to 7 p.m., and there are going to be over 50 different beers that you can taste. Maybe not necessarily all of them at one time, but you can
careful.
Get a good sense of them. Taking place down at the Phoenix Theater, just off of Mass Avenue, that will be a ton of fun this weekend, 3 to 7.
FYI, there are designated driver tickets available for
good
$10.
To know.
Yeah. Hey, if you love animals, I have to tell you about an exhibit that actually opens next Friday on July 2nd and runs through the month of July. It's at the Athenaeum Art Space, and it's called For the Love of Dogs, The Art of Shelter Dogs, and it features artwork picturing and with photography and other media. So woof. Oh, yeah, exactly. Shelter dogs. And a portion of the sales will benefit the dogs at the Indianapolis Humane Society. So how cool is that? There's an opening reception next Friday, July 2nd, at the Athenaeum Art Space, which is, surprise, inside the Athenaeum. So check out For the Love of Dogs. And I have to say, their postcard portrait is just darling. It makes you want to just go adopt that dog right
Aww.
Away. So be careful. You might buy artwork and go to the Humane Society and get a new pet.
Not bad things at all.
No.
Hey, a big congratulations to the Arts Council of Indianapolis on their move to their new space
Isn't
and their new location.
Cool?
It's gorgeous. It's on Pennsylvania Street, 900 block, right next to Living Room Lounge. And I got to say, Sharon, I think the coolest thing about the new space is the beautiful gallery
the
that
gallery.
They've built. And right now, the show, I thought was what a great idea to open up the Arts Council's new gallery space. All the work on exhibit is work that is actually owned by employees of the Arts Council, and there's some great notes there about, you know, how each piece was purchased and
mm-hmm.
when and why and all that. But it's all local artists and locally bought work, and just a really interesting exhibit. Love the work there, and love the idea.
And if you drive by, even if you don't pop in for a peek, again, it's in the building with the Living Room Lounge, just south of the Living Room Lounge. But slow down as you're going down Pennsylvania and look at the artwork in the window, because the Arts Council commissioned a local artist to do this amazing kind of stylized bird wing that covers the window. Very beautiful.
Very cool stuff. So congratulations to Dave and everyone at the Arts Council
Absolutely.
On that move.
Very smart.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of artwork, I know this sounds far away, but it really isn't. Day of the Dead is coming around this every fall, in fact, and the Book Mamas over in Irvington, our friends Kathleen Angeloni and company, are looking for Day of the Dead themed artwork that they're going to put up in their store. And it'll be in their store throughout the months of September and October. And you can just go online to Book Mamas and find out more parameters. They're looking for submissions by August 14th, and they're going to make a final decision on works to be displayed on August 26th. So, very cool, and if you aren't already involved with the Indianapolis Art Center and Day of the Dead, or maybe you already are, check out this new project at Book Mamas.
And concerts continue through all summer long. Lots of different downtown venues that have concerts. What I want to mention right now, the concerts on the canal at the Indiana Historical Society, if you're planning for those, July 4th weekend. This is a great way to enjoy July 4th. That's not a Thursday, but Tad Robinson and the Indianapolis Municipal Band are going to be playing some bluesy rock and roll and a bunch of patriotic tunes down at the canal. A great place to check out the fireworks later. And then on July 8th, Carmel Ensemble Brass, Red, White, and Blue in Brass, will be performing a whole bunch of popular tunes and patriotic melodies as well. The concerts are free. You can reserve tables and seats, and they take place 6 to 8 p.m. The July 4th one is actually 4:30 to 9:30 p.m., and there's food and drink available and all that sort of stuff. Check out IndianaHistory.org for more information.
And speaking of downtown concerts, I'm sure you've been following in the news the plans for the renovation of City Market, and great Matthew Tully column about that a couple days ago in the Star, about the need for more art and music and so on and so forth. Well, in fact, there is a lunchtime concert series going on at the City Market, 11:30 to 1:30. And this is, if you scurry, you can catch through Saturday the end of Elvis Week. So all sorts of Elvis covers and interpretations at the lunchtime concert series at the Indianapolis City Market.
Cool, and the last thing I've got is the Indiana Wind Symphony is performing up at the Carmel Gazebo Sunday afternoon, 6 p.m., and it is free. Again, this is at the Carmel Gazebo, the City of Carmel Center Lawn, and they will be performing. Ken Knowles will be singing from Turndo, and there's also some other arias that will be sung, and music from West Side Story, and Beauty and the Beast, and
wow,
all types of fun stuff. It's free concert, Indiana Wind Symphony performing 6 p.m. Sunday night.
And Travis, do you have your dancing shoes on?
I do.
Or close by?
Of course. Yeah.
Well, I can see through that counter. Mm-hmm. I can see over on the other side. Well, where you're going to want to wear them is Saturday night, the Jazz Kitchen. That's this Saturday, June 26th. Don't worry, it doesn't start till 10, and it goes till 3 in the morning. It's a fun event put on by our friends, the collective that calls itself Cultural Cannibals. It's Bollywood.
Arthur.
Uh-huh. At the Jazz Kitchen with DJ Kyle Long, spinning all sorts of amazing dance tunes. And it's been billed as an outrageously fun night. So Jazz Kitchen, Saturday night, the 26th, from 10 to 3. Admission, $5.
Excellent. Well, we will have more things to do and celebrate summer with next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The 2010 Indianapolis Early Music Festival kicks off this weekend with the music of Monteverdi, and it continues through July with a wide selection of Baroque and Renaissance music. Travis DiNicola spoke with the festival's board member, Margo Schuring, about the concerts.
Welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you again. It must be summer if you're here.
Indeed it is. Not only summer, but early music festival time.
Exactly. You can almost like set your calendar by it.
Indeed.
In fact, now we're recording this right before the first concert of the Indianapolis Early Music Festival, which is actually taking place on June 25th, when this show first airs, the Art Tech concert. But there's a lot of other concerts coming up over the next couple weeks and throughout July that we'll be talking about. But before we get into all the details about the concerts, just, if you would, give me just sort of a little bit of background on what the Indianapolis Early Music is.
The Indianapolis Early Music is the successor to the corporate organization Festival Music Society, Inc.
Okay.
We do focus on Renaissance and Baroque music, occasionally traversing a little bit into the classical era, but not often.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so usually you're looking at instruments such as...
lutes, mm-hmm. and such rare things as theorbos and viols, the whole family of violins and viols,
okay.
Viola da gamba, just the plain viol, which is played like a violin, like a viola sort
mm-hmm.
of. Also some harps, guitars occasionally.
Okay, okay.
A broad selection of instruments.
Great. And the festival that that goes on each the end of June and into July, I mean, this has been going on for a number of years.
Indeed it has. We are well past 40 years old now.
Congratulations.
Thank
yes.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's great. And now this year, as it has for the past many years, it's taking place. All the events are at the Indiana History Center on the canal, of course, in that great performance space.
Indeed. We are delighted to be back there this year. After having to take a hiatus for a year while
mm-hmm.
they did work on the area,
right.
We are thrilled to pieces to be back downtown.
Good. Very good. Well, I'm sure they're thrilled to have you back. That's a great location for you to be. As we mentioned, the first concert, which is taking place on Friday the 25th when the show is airing right now, in fact, is Artek. Is that how it's pronounced, Artek?
It is indeed.
And,
A-R-T-E-K.
Okay, and so that is going on. So we're going to actually jump ahead, if you don't mind, because
that's
we've got
fine.
A concert coming up on Sunday, this Sunday, the 27th, at 7:30 p.m., and this group is titled Ensemble Viscera, and they, like all the groups that you bring in, I mean, they're from all over the country, from all over the world, really.
They are indeed. Mostly we use American musicians now
mm-hmm.
for immigration reasons. It's tricky to get visas and things. However, we do feature music from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We've never done the Far East, but we've certainly done the Middle East.
Okay. Well, tell me about Ensemble Viscera, because you mentioned lutes earlier, and they're going to be playing lots of lutes, a feast of lutes even.
They are indeed, but in addition, they will have vihuela, early guitars, recorder, theorbo, which is a fascinating instrument, bandoro, and cittern. Forging an alloy of sounds and colors unique in the world of early music.
Very interesting. Now, one of the subtitles for a piece or for the evening is Crime and Punishment, the Underworld of Jacquera in the 17th Century Spain. Tell me a bit about that. I'm intrigued.
Well, the Jacquera...
Jacquera, excuse me.
...began its life as a ballad about the ruffians, bravos, pimps, whores, pickpockets, and swindlers that made up the small-time criminal underworld of 17th century Madrid and Seville.
Well, that sounds like a soap opera.
It does,
or
indeed.
An adventure story.
The music is sung by was sung by actresses at the public theaters, no doubt also heard in taverns, plazas, and fairs. So the music became more or less like troubadour music in that it far exceeded its original walls of the locations and was sung out and around.
Do you know, is that how, I mean, much of this music was performed? Or I mean, what I mean, as an audience member who maybe does not know a whole lot about early music and is trying to sort of understand where it came from and the origins, and, you know, there's sort of this image of it, you know, of dances of maidens in castles or something. I mean, I'm trying to, like, understand how realistic that is.
It actually was performed outside of castles
mm-hmm.
and the like. This particular music, that is not true of all music of that era. It
mm-hmm.
depends a lot on the nature of the music. The Jacquera was sung that way.
Okay.
But sometimes your minuets or mm-hmm. whatever were not so much so.
Okay.
So it just depends on the kind of music it is. This is more folk music or drinking song music. It was the
Excellent.
Body music of the era, as opposed to the very courtly.
So this sounds like this may be a bit of a rowdy concert.
I hope so.
Okay. Now, the next one coming up, I'm going to ask you to pronounce this because I'm having troubles with is it Piffaro?
It's Piffaro.
Piffaro. Okay.
Yes.
On July 9th, so after the July 4th weekend and all that, so Friday, July 9th, and again, these are early music concerts at the Indiana History Center, and tell me about Piffaro. They're a wind group, correct?
It's a wind band as such. And a wind band is not really a marching band per se,
yeah.
But they all do play rhythmically and as a cohesive group as opposed to an orchestra where you may have some playing very slow and some very fast. It tends to work together in a very cohesive element, I think.
How big is the band?
Not terribly. It's 6 or 8, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Huh. Very interesting. And what sort of music will they be playing then?
They will be playing Renaissance music. That's of the same era as the Spanish music, or possibly a little older.
Okay.
The Renaissance period ended before the Baroque, which started about the 17th century. So it was prior to that, and it will be very light music probably, although there will be some times when it's bombastic, as wind instruments occasionally are, not brass instruments, but wind instruments. But it will be very listenable music, certainly in every sense of the word, because we strive for that for our audiences. We want it to be something everyone can enjoy.
I'm sure. And then that same weekend, as we mentioned, Piffero's on July 9th, the Friday. The next concert, El Mundo, and that is on July 11th. That's Sunday evening. Again, it's 7:30. And this is a Spanish Baroque opera.
Yes, it is indeed. This is a little different from anything we've had the last few years. I'm not of the impression that there will be a profound amount of singing in this, although I'm sure there will be some. But it's more like it's music from these operas, not the whole opera performed in toto. And it's two separate operas, and one is Zarzuela, which is one opera in and of itself, and I'm sorry to say that I don't know very much about Zarzuela, but it was a dramatic musical genre, sort of like a musical comedy, in that it has both singing and spoken word.
Okay.
And then they will go on from there to perform parts of the Jesuit mission opera San Ignacio, which is St. Ignace.
Well, I would imagine, too, for opera fans, this would be an interesting concert to go to, just for the historical value, because this is very early opera.
Absolutely. Actually, it is it is very early, but it is not all that different from early Italian opera. And they shared a lot of cross-cultural exchange between Italy and Spain at that time.
Okay.
But I wholeheartedly invite our singers around town to patronize this concert. It's been a few years since we had something that was so heavily, seriously sung. We've had some very entertaining programs that were light and fun singing, certainly, but
sure,
nothing with the serious cohesive element of this concert, and I really am so pleased that we are back to having a vocal program because I'm a singer.
Well, excellent. So that'll be a great concert then. Again, that one's on July 11th, El Mundo. The next concert on July 23rd, I'm very, very curious about this one. A group called Canconier, is that it? Perhaps?
Yes, Canconier.
Canconier, excuse me. And what intrigues me about this is that I know that they specialize in improvisation, which is something that you certainly think about with jazz music. Every now and then, though, it's much more rare to find it with classical music, and I'm not sure that I'm even aware of it at all with early music, that there's improvisational groups. So tell me more about this.
Well, this one is going to be a very nice program, too. It's music from the time of Vlad Dracula, and that's the Dracula of story fame in more recent centuries. However, Dracula himself, there was a real person, Dracula, and he was a very negative, a very he was called Dracula the Impaler.
Vlad the Impaler,
so,
yeah.
So he really was a very violent man. Mm-hmm. The music will be very...
So it'll be based on those stories.
In addition to which, this is the concert, and I'm really excited about this, that features music from all over the Mediterranean region, the Slavic states, the Turkey, and other nations in that area, not into the truly Arabic, however, with a strong Arabic influence from the Moorish populations of those countries. And I think it's going to be a great concert. I happen to love that kind of music, so I'm very excited.
I can tell you're very
excited
about that. Okay. And the final concert on July 25th, and again, the Indianapolis Early Music taking place at Indiana History Center. This group, Ensemble Caprice, we actually heard at the beginning of the show, and we're going to give a quick listen to again now. Gypsy music, but they're also, it's Vivaldi and Baroque Gypsy that they'll be playing. Tell me about this.
Yes, indeed. Well, as we were talking about the previous concert, there was a lot of meandering around the Mediterranean rim during the era, both of the Renaissance period and later into the Baroque period. And there were influences from all these parts of the world that played on each other. And in this particular concert, I think there's going to be, most of the music will be Vivaldi, but he talks about writing music with or for or under the influence of the gypsies. So obviously he wasn't a pure Italian in everything that he wrote. He also had influences from another culture largely ignored in Italy, the gypsies.
Interesting. Well, that should be a great concert to end with. Now, all the concerts that are part of the Indianapolis Early Music, it's festival seating. You can certainly get individual tickets. There's student tickets available, single tickets. Information at emindy.org, Early Music Indy, emindy.org. What else would you, Margo, would you like to share with us about these upcoming concerts?
I am just so excited about this year's concerts. As I said, I'm pleased that we have more vocal music occurring during this concert. And I just can't too wholeheartedly encourage people to check us out, because people think, ooh, early music, ooh, Baroque, ooh, Renaissance. Do I want to get into that? Absolutely. It is the most fun music in all the world. And we have a devout following, though not as large as it should be, of people who realize what fun it is to go to early music concerts. And I cannot too strongly invite all of your listeners to come and be part of these concerts, because they are fun, they are entertaining, they are intellectually stimulating, and it's just a marvelous way to spend some summer evenings.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming into Art of the Matter and sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis Early Music Festival's Margo Schuring. The concert series takes place from this weekend through July 25th, with all shows at the Indiana History Center. Sunday's concert with Ensemble Viscera begins at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at emindy.org, emindy.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. For the July 4th weekend, we're going to revisit a few recent interviews. I'll take a look at the Ouija photography exhibit at the IMA.
I'll take a listen to the new CD featuring Indiana musicians raising money and awareness for Alzheimer's.
And I'll chat with filmmaker Steve Mara. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.